Session. This is the regular meeting of Portland City Council. Communications are up first. Sue?
And I will now call the roll to Fritz.
Oh, I always forget that.
Fish?
Here.
Salzman?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here.
And the first item is 31, request of Crystal Olinsky to address council regarding happy birthday. Is Crystal here? Request of Wayne Wignes to address council regarding illegal blocking of a public right-of-way under Burnside Bridge.
If you could state your name for the record, and just a reminder, you have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay. My name is Wayne Wignes. Until just a couple of months ago, the sidewalk underneath the Burnside Bridge had been blocked off with the use of caution tape since the summer of 2013. This is a time when Mayor Hales took it upon himself to tell people that they could not sleep in local doorways. I was sleeping under the bridge at this time, and I watched this cause a massive influx of people more than could fit. And this right here caused the violence, not just allowing people to sleep there. A few years ago, a breakthrough international study was published on violence between chimpanzees. The reasons the study was such a big deal is that the parallel to human nature is clear. Chimpanzees are the only other hominid known to commit homicide besides us. In homeless crowds, this proves true. What the study showed was that violence increased not just with numbers, but more specifically with a decrease in availability of resources. In homeless crowds, this proves true. Fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with allowing a large body of people to congregate. It's just that if you take away their freedom and you make them fight for a place to sleep, then they just might do so. Now, that sidewalk, that center sidewalk, used to be a place of refuge for strangers. We had a system in place. We were out of pedestrians' way. Central City would clean up in the morning, and there was less trash. Today, it's basically the opposite. You have a lot of small pockets of often degenerate and territorial groups who are obstructing a public max stop. It's trashy, and I don't even feel comfortable going down there. Recently, I obtained a copy of the lease agreement for that parking lot, and it showed that that center sidewalk is not included in the lease, and PBOT administers the public right-of-way, but PBOT did not have a permit on file, and neither is the use of caution tape permissible to them. In response, the Foundation did take the tape down, but the cops are still applying the law in a subjective fashion on behalf of the U of O Foundation. The lease stipulates that the city need only vote to take the parking lot away from them. We don't need to spend so much on shuffling the issue around when a diamond in the rough is right underneath our noses. The Burnside Bridge offers overhead protection from the rain. It's centralized next to resources, and if that parking lot, or at least the sidewalk adjacent to it, were to again be utilized, it could accommodate a lot of people in a way that is unobtrusive and inoffensive to pedestrians. And when you have this, then you have an environment where the two can interact. And when you have that, understanding rather than resentment grows. Without that, your job as mayor is going to be impossible. Now, this is the same company who tried to change the OMF sign back in 2008. The Maiden Organ sign back in 2008. And it begins to seem that they will do whatever they can get away with. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next item, please.
Next, yeah. 33. Request of Sarah Hobbs to address council regarding quickly fix Vista Bridge suicide prevention barrier.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sarah Hobbs and Commissioner Saltzman. Since I signed up for this, I have gotten the status report on the status of the repairs to the West Rail. Suicide means deterrent. So I know where it is. They brought to my attention that your office is aware of what has happened there, and I will be very much in contact with your point people on this. The Vista Bridge Suicide Means Reduction Project was very personal to me, and hopefully I can tell you this without getting emotional. In 2005, if it were not for a last-minute realization, I did not want my children's last memory of me being that I had leapt from the bridge and died on Jefferson Street, I would not be here today. So that when I heard that there was that accident to put that 30-yard hole in that middle of the West Rail barrier, I was frantic. But it is a work in progress. In 2015, the Portland Police Bureau's Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team responded to 1,200 suicide crisis calls. I am still trying to get the breakdown of how many of those calls were high-risk calls, but I can tell you a high-risk call involving a firearm that had a very tragic ending for everyone involved happened directly across the street from where I live in November of 2015. I know the three of you are very aware of this story. I would love Mayor and Commissioner Udaly to have this discussion with you. In conversations with people in the know, while the Unity Center will relieve a lot of the burden for long-term follow-up from the Behavioral Health Unit, it will not remove responsibility for suicide response. We need, as a city, to start having these discussions by pawning it off to the county. And I'm running out of time, but I tell you, I want to follow up with you on this. I was a volunteer with the Oregon State Chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I am here to help you, but I need to have these conversations with you. You were right, Commissioner Udaly, when you told me we do need to start changing the conversations we are having around suicide, but we need to start having the conversations to be able to do that.
Thank you.
All right, well, be back.
We appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Sue, next item, please.
Next item, 34, request of Michael Withy to address council regarding affordable microhousing and homeless villages.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Mike Withy, I'm here this morning representing Micro Community Concepts, a nonprofit here in Portland, Oregon. We concentrate on the tiny house movement and all the facets of that. And real quickly, I'd just like to explain what that is. The tiny house movement and today's tiny house movement is a tiny house is a tiny house on a trailer. It's built, stick built strong on a trailer. Unfortunately, they're still illegal here in Portland, Oregon, which is amazing because Portland, Oregon is world renowned as a leader of the tiny house movement. Another part of the tiny house movement are ADUs, you know, accessory dwelling units built on the ground in backyards or a converted garage. We also have micro housing as part of the tiny house movement. We've designed micro communities that were kind of popular a couple years ago with the last mayor especially, but we found a way to go ahead and build them through the private sector and then sell them to the city much less of a cost than what it would cost you to build it. So hopefully with this bond that went through, we should be able to build a couple micro communities and supply them for affordable housing. And then we have intentional communities as part of the tiny house movement, because most of the intentional communities do have a factor of tiny house living in them. It could be cob homes, it could be. So you could have an intentional community that could be built specifically for seniors, for people that are disabled, and we're actually doing that around the country. We probably should catch up a little bit. And then another part of the tiny house movement has to do with tiny houses for the homeless, and that is also catching on big time, not just here in Portland, but throughout the country. We go throughout the country and speak on the benefits of all these tiny house parts of the tiny house movement, but what's catching on quick are the tiny houses for the homeless, because it's a much less expensive way to get folks in. Example, Bud Clark Commons, even though I do love the building, I love the concept, it was great, but if we look at the cost, $2,500 per tiny house is what the last mayor paid Pod to build these tiny houses. $2,500 as compared to $250,000, let's say, for a studio, that's 100 times the people we could get off the street. So we really need to look at the tiny house movement in all of its glory, not just ADUs, not just tiny houses on wheels, which we should add to this new zoning proposal to make them legal, to say, hey, we could consider this an ADU if it has skirting, if you take it off the wheels, whatever we need to do to make them legal here in Portland. Also, finally, I am a little concerned about the tiny house movement for the homeless, only because not just things have gone awry or off track, but we could do a lot better job by saying, listen, you have a certain amount of time to be there. You can't be there for 10 years. You need a caseworker. You should be from that section. You have to work with your neighborhood association, good neighbor policies. So even though the new one going in Kenton is beautiful, we need a citywide policy for all of the tiny house communities for the homeless so that we have some consistency. And that's about it.
Michael, can I just make one observation? Thank you for your work, not only in micro housing, but in flagging innovative ways to bring the cost down of affordable housing. Those are two vitally important things. The one thing, though, that I'm going to just gently push back is when we invest in affordable housing with services, we build apartments, and then we have meeting spaces, and we have on-site healthcare clinics, and we have other things. So if we divide the units by the total cost of the building, we have a very misleading number of the cost per unit.
You know, I got that from the Portland Tribune, so I digress.
And, of course, the media never is infallible. But the Bug Clark Commons, as you know, because you and I spent a lot of time there, has a lot of services. It serves hungry people. It has shelter spaces. It has showers. It has places that people get referrals and the like. So to take the units and divide by the cost of the building is a highly misleading number. And if we continue down that path, then we won't be winning the argument as to why we place services on site. And in my view, particularly for the people that we lost over the last 2 weeks, we've learned something very powerful. And we lost a fellow citizen who died in the shadow of a shelter that had capacity. And here's what we learned. That person is not going to go into a shelter for a whole host of reasons. That person would have been alive today if they had a home and we provided services. That's called supportive housing. And it tends to be a little more expensive because you have to marry a home and the services to stabilize someone's life. And that's where I'll be making a push through this budget. But I just, again, with Bug Clark Commons, unless we divide the whole building by the units, we're getting a very misleading figure.
I understand, and thank you for making that point. I'll make a counterpoint, which is the Henry Building, which is $1,000 a square foot to rehab. We can build brand new apartments up for $100 a square foot. Why would we spend $1,000 a square foot to rehab the Henry Building,
I hate to be the heavy here, but this is communication. Sure. So if we want to have further policy discussions, we'll have that opportunity to do so. Clerk, if you could call the next item, please.
35, request of Stan Herman to address council to review and respond to being in violation of ORS 830.035. Is Stan here? He did ask to reschedule.
Okay.